I mean, look, when you're in the youth game, you can get away with being very good technically, very good tactically, and very good physically, and not very good from a mentality perspective because you're just better than everybody else. And so who cares? You could be one of the most indisciplined players there is and still be completely dominant and still have or be one of the most important players on the team and the coach relying on you, irrespective of the psychological component. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today, we're going to talk about mentality. So there are these four classic buckets in which player development falls under. It's the technical, the tactical, the physical, and the mental slash psychological. And it is that last one that we're going to be diving into today. In my opinion, I mean, they're all super critically important, okay? But at the highest levels, the higher the level you go, the more and more important the mentality piece of that puzzle becomes. Because the higher and higher you go, the better everybody is technically, the better everybody is tactically. The physical thing has kind of equaled out at that point. And then what is the main differentiator at that point? Well, you guessed it. It is the mentality side. So what does that actually mean? I speak with Benny today, and we're going to figure that out in the next hour that we are together here. But per usual, give me 15 seconds here to direct folks to what sponsors this program. First up, the 343 Masterclass itself, the parent education program itself. Parents, get on over to 343masterclass.com. The program is now open. You can see the links there. They are live. You can just click and join up in a matter of minutes. So I think that's very important. And then, of course, coaches, we started with you in 2013. The program is better than ever. We've been going strong for over 10 years. Thousands of coaches have learned the methodology from Brian Kleiben, you know, all his unprecedented work here in the American soccer environment. Coaches, head on over to 343coaching.com. And if for whatever reason you happen to be starting with the little ones in the 7-versus-7 environment, head on over to 7v7coaching.com. All right, that's it. Very short ads. Let's get into the show with Benny Rogers. Here we go.
What you been up to this weekend?
Working, just working on the MLS salary app.
How's it going?
It's going little by little, man. I don't know. Well, I know you haven't done software development, but it's not fast. Let's put it to you that way. It's fast to prototype something, but it's not fast to do things right. And it's definitely not fast when you're trying to develop brand new technology. So I can get something up and operating and solving a problem like this, you know, but having the bigger picture in mind, you can't slap something together. You have to really methodically think it through before writing code and deploying code and all that sort of stuff. It's the technical debt that we talked about before.
Are you happy with the progress that you've made so far, or do you wish that you were further down the line already?
I'm kind of satisfied because it's already useful. The thing that I'm not satisfied with is I'm spinning too many plates, as you know. Teach, agency, masterclass, coaching, customer support. It's nonstop, Ben. And then so on top of all that is whenever I can carve out a little bit of time, it's the AI stuff. All right, brother, what do you want to talk about today?
Well, what you were kind of talking about, I mean, being stretched too thin and having to, you know, sacrifice things, it's one of the lessons of the 343 Player Development Masterclass. It's titled Work Ethic, Sacrifice, Mentality, Culture, and Technical Debt. So I thought it'd be good to maybe go through that one. Maybe you can, without name dropping, share some experiences, or maybe if you do want to name drop, right? But I think you, especially in all the work that you and Brian have done over the years, you've seen countless players that maybe have everything that it takes to be successful, but they didn't have all those things that we just listed out. So I kind of wanted to hear your thoughts on what your mindset was kind of when you were creating this lesson. And to me personally, I think this might be the most important lesson of the masterclass, because without all of this stuff, everything that you're doing is pointless, right? If you're not putting in time, effort, if you don't have the right mentality, you're not going to be successful in what you're trying to do.
Okay. Well, for the audience to know, we don't coordinate the topics. We just show up here and then you're throwing something out at me and I'm just blindly going to go off the cuff. So there's been no preparation, no nothing. If you don't mind repeating again all those things that you threw out there at me in the very beginning, what lesson is this?
So this is work ethic, sacrifice, mentality, culture, and technical debt, right? And you kind of start out by saying, right, I'm sure everybody's heard these terms before: work ethic, sacrifice, mentality, grit, culture, grind, or even the saying that hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. And you simply state it. I mean, this is the reality. Let me get your thoughts and then I'll share some of my own experience that I've had as well with all of this stuff.
Got it. I think this kind of goes under the bucket of the four major categories or player attribute: the technical, the tactical, the physical, and the psychological. And this particular one goes into that last bucket, the psychological or the mental side of the equation. And for sure, man, I mean, look, when you're in the youth game, you can get away with being very good technically, very good tactically, and very good physically, and not very good from a mentality perspective because you're just better than everybody else. And so who cares? You could be one of the most indisciplined players there is and still be completely dominant and still have or be one of the most important players on the team and the coach relying on you, irrespective of the psychological component. And sure, there are a number of coaches that try to do their best to develop that psychological or mentality bucket, but I find that that is the one that the coaches have least impact because you only have the player a certain number of hours per week, whatever that might be. Maybe it's 3 hours a week, 4 hours a week, 6 hours a week, whatever it is. But I don't know how many hours are in a week, 24 times seven. Yes. So it's 168 hours a week. Okay. So there's 160 hours per week that are not with the coach. So who are the players with? They're with family, they're with friends, they're at school, they're with that entire environment there. So let's get back to how that doesn't really impact you in the youth game. If you're big, fast, and strong, especially here in the United States, you will dominate. When you get to the next level, and it doesn't even have to be the pro level. If it's the pro level, forget about it. We'll talk about that in a minute. But it could even be the college level. Let's say you're good enough to be selected by a Division I college program. Well, the player pool there is now loaded with a bunch of technically good, tactically good, and physically good players. And so the gap between you and your teammates isn't as large as it was during the youth game. And so all of a sudden, you might find yourself with competition and you might be a freshman and not be a starter. How do you handle that? Or you might be a freshman, you might be playing, but you're not a starter. How do you handle that? Or you might be a starter as a freshman, but then somebody else jacks your spot and the coach likes somebody else and starts starting the other guy over you and you're just a bench guy. How do you handle that? And if you've been a starter your whole youth career, it's very difficult unless you've been mentally prepared. And the ones who mentally prepare the players, by and large, are the parents, the family environment. That's number one. Number one, okay? And then a second, probably a distant second, is your circle of friends. And then, you know, way down the line is your coach. Coach can't do jack shit at that point, or your personal trainer, or all those sorts of things. So no, I'll pause there for a moment. And then of course I can share some personal experiences because like you hinted at, you know, I'll let Brian speak for himself, but you know, we have very similar sort of experiences to a certain degree. We've seen hundreds, if not thousands of players throughout the entire youth trajectory from 9 years of age. And then they graduate and move on to play college soccer, or move on and play USL, or move on and play MLS, or move on and play in Europe. And not just our players. I'm speaking countless players that we've never even dealt with, you know, and we followed their trajectories and we see what happens, Benny. So we can tell those stories.
Right. Well, one, the fact of the matter is, like, especially when you're 6, 7 years old, I feel like some players kind of just naturally have it. I remember Brian sharing a story about when he first saw Efrain Alvarez, and I think it was maybe his brother's game or something. And then at halftime, right, Brian just sees this little kid, he's 6 years old, and this was just pinging balls, six shots from outside the box at halftime, right? But obviously, Efrain didn't get that from, you know, sacrifice or having a mentality, like, or waking up at 5 in the morning to go train. He was kind of like just naturally gifted or naturally talented. the hard part for Ephra, is he still where he is today without the hard work and the sacrifice and having the right mentality?
Well, I don't think Ephra really ever in his youth had a great mentality or massive hard work or sacrifice, because he was standard deviations away from everybody else. He was that good, naturally talented player. So wait, what was your question? Because I think you kind of framed the question as if he did have a strong mentality.
No, I'm saying he didn't, like in him pinging the balls and like having that technique, it didn't come from having hard work and motivation and mentality, right? So for other players, especially at the younger ages, like if you want to get to that level, what does it take? Obviously, you can't just wake up one day and have the technique of Ephra or Alex, right? So for players that aren't naturally gifted, they have to put in more work and time and sacrifice, dedication, all those things.
Yeah. Well, because you can beat out the other player on the physical side and the mentality side. And by the way, you may never be Ephra ever, no matter how hard you work. It doesn't matter. You will not be him. And I can't give exactly the reason why. It's just the biomechanics of the player, the way Ephra strokes the ball, the way he moves his body. You can't just replicate that. But you know how many players, Benny, I would say the vast majority of players who are successful professionals, for example, are so not because they are outrageously talented like Ephra. I think they're successful as pros because they are, in the truest sense of the word, professionals. They are professionals in their craft. I'm sure you may have seen this reel. So Rio Ferdinand was interviewing Beckham, and Beckham told a story about Leo Messi coming to Inter Miami. And, you know, from the get-go up until today, training starts at 10 in the morning with the team. And one of the first things that Beckham noticed is that Leo was there at 6:45 in the morning already. That's when he arrived, at 6:45 a.m. And everybody's wondering, oh, why is Leo here at 6:45 and training's at 10? And he'll go and he'll just do some light warm up, you know, some light jogging. He'll get in the gym, do a couple things, you know, in the gym, preparing his mental state for training and for football. And this is like his religion. This is his method. This is his discipline. And this is a player who has won absolutely everything, the greatest of all time, however many Ballon d'Ors he has, just won the World Cup, Ben. And he is there before all of the Inter Miami players by a long shot, you know, getting prepared. So just think about that. You know who should be showing up aside from all the other Inter Miami players? How about the young guys, the freshly minted homegrown player, you know, the 17-year-old or the 18-year-old or the 16-year-old who is on the second team? Those guys should be doing what Leo is doing, not Leo. Leo could just roll up whenever he wants. Leo doesn't even have to show up to training, you know, and just be Leo Messi. But no, he does it anyway.
Leo, for me, I'll take you back to the first day that he came into our training ground. He arrived at about 6:50 in the morning, and there was nobody in the training facility apart from one guy to let him in. He arrived at 6:50.
That's nuts, man.
And the team weren't training till 10. Team weren't training till 10.
What's he doing then?
Preparing. He's in the gym, he's warming up, he's doing all of the things that you expect a young kid to do, and he's still doing them now at his age, and he's everything that he's won in his career, you'd expect him to be a bit more relaxed. But if I had to describe him with one, he's a winner. Mm. He's simple as that, he's a winner. And not in the sense of what he's won, but he's still hungry.
So my point here is, Leo's a unique case, okay, because he has it all. He has Efrain Alvarez's natural talent, and he has all that work, talent, discipline. And I think Ephra could have been, I don't know if he still can be, he's still young, but you have to do a complete 180. He could be a Champions League caliber player with no problem at all if he were to have that fourth component, if he were to have that thing that I just described about Leo himself. And as for all the other players who are not Leos or Ephras, most pros aren't. They're there because they are outrageously disciplined and professionals. Benny, and not super talented. I'll tell you something else, and I'll shut up. Most of the super talented, by far the most talented youth players that we've ever seen here in this country, never made it. And the ones who made it and made a good career, a professional career, were complete average Joes. Now, I'm not exaggerating. Complete average Joes from a technical perspective, from a tactical perspective. But guess what? They were disciplined motherfuckers and committed motherfuckers, and they ate shit and they just stuck with it, and they weren't starters, you know, at certain points in their career, and they just kept going and going and going.
Yeah. So really what you're saying, Gary, is like, there's no reason why Messi still needs to be showing up at 6:30 before all these other guys. Like you said, he's won everything. He's been to the highest pinnacles of soccer, but the fact that he is that type of professional is why he's made it so far. And even other players that maybe weren't born with these types of qualities, they've put in the sacrifice. They've had the right mentality to not give up or to go and put in that extra effort in order to make it to the top, right? I mean, how many players do you know, Gary, or that you work with that could be Champions League quality players, but they didn't have the mentality? They weren't willing to put in the extra work.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to mention names, but I've been on record on Twitter. Like people can go to my Twitter timeline. They could just go to Twitter advanced search, right? And in Twitter advanced search, you can put, hey, from this account, search these keywords, you know, maybe they can search Champions League from me or whatever the heck it is. You can explore my timeline. I've come out publicly a long time ago when these guys were 13 years old or 14 years old, 15. I would estimate that I'd say maybe like four or five guys could have been consistent Champions League club players. No question about it.
Pretty sad to think about.
Yeah, but it's just, that's one, that's football. And two, I think it's a truism in anything in life. There's people who are ultra talented, but they just won't put in the work to fulfill their potential. It's just as simple as that, Benny. Yeah. Like, you're super talented at things, or you can be super talented at things. What if you, whatever it is your goal is, let's say you want to be the next Joe Rogan, Benny, okay? Or get to as close to Joe Rogan as you can now that you're involved in podcasting. Well, doing what you're doing now, it's never going to happen. Okay. What could make it happen is if you 16 hours of every day, you are glued to everything that is podcasting and recording 16 hours a day and editing 16 hours a day and, you know, clip and doing that 16 hours a day for 10 years, you might not be Joe Rogan, but I guarantee you, you will be somebody in the space. No question.
And something that's really important that you bring up within the actual module, because I feel like a lot of parents may be hearing this and they're thinking like, fuck, like my kid doesn't have time to be training 16 hours a day or to go that extra mile. But something that you bring up is that depending on the player's objectives, the level of commitment is adjustable, right?
Totally.
So maybe everybody's objective is not to become a pro soccer player, but let's say you're 8 years old and you just joined the team and right now you're the worst player on the team, there's still a chance for you to become and like catch up to your peers at that point, right? Maybe you're not going to become a pro, but of course, you know, there's work that can be done.
100%. Look, I don't want people to get the wrong idea here that we only talk about pros and pro right. player development. No, the idea of pro player development, we just have that framing many times here because that kind of gives everybody some appreciation for what the gold standard is. Okay. And then you work based off of that. And that is the gold standard in coaching, the gold standard in personal training, the gold standard in all these four components, technical, tactical, physical, mental. Yes. You guys probably aren't going to meet the gold standard by and large. You know, if you just look at the percentages, what is it? 1% or something ends up making it to, I don't know, some sort of high level, you know, so 99 out of 100 never make it. But yeah, you're exactly right, Benny. The objective here is if the parents or whoever's listening is educated on what the gold standard is truly though, then yeah, if you're 8 years old and you're not getting a lot of playing time, cool. Maybe up your game in these things that we talk about just a little bit, because your teammates, guess what? Probably aren't doing that. And over maybe 6 months from now or a year from now or next season or something, all of a sudden you're getting way more playing time because you put in the time. And maybe 2 years from now, two seasons from now, maybe you're the starter now and a critical piece to the team. So now you're 10 or 11 years old and you went from potentially dropping out of the sport altogether because you're never playing because you're, let's be real, not very good, to 2 years later, all of a sudden you're starting every game, you're enjoying yourself, you're a good player at that point. So it doesn't mean you're going to be a pro. It doesn't mean you're going to be a starter on your varsity high school team. It doesn't mean you're going to get a Division I college scholarship. That's not the point. Baby steps, right? One step at a time.
Right. So would you say that it for parents or even young players, 8, 9, 10 years old, do you think when they're at that age, it's too far-fetched to say like, hey, my goal right now is to become a pro? You know, obviously they're not going to become a pro at 10, but like that's what they're working for. Or should they set smaller goals that are more attainable in the short term so that way they can build up? Because I feel like so many parents that have come across there, it's like, oh, like I'm doing everything that I can to make my kid become a pro. And like in reality, like you just said, 1% of players are going to become pro. So would it be better to have short-term goals, meaning like, okay, my kid is right now on a flight 3 team. Let's work the next 2 years to get him to flight 1. And then after that, okay, let's try and get him on an ECNL team.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know that I have a definitive answer because like most things, it depends. Let me give you an example. Many times it's good to have outrageously improbable goals and fight for those because if you aim for the stars, you might land on the moon sort of thing. You know what I mean? Or if you aim for the moon, you might end up getting into orbit, you know, to do this whole rocket sort of space exploration analogy. So that could be a good thing to do is aim for the stars, aim for being a professional. And then, oh, you didn't make it. Where did you land? Oh, you landed in a Division II college soccer. Okay, well, not bad, right? Versus the other extreme is, hey, let's not even think about that at all. Let's not even have a dream. Let's not even have a dream and just say, hey, how about by next season, you know, I work my ass off to be a regular player on the field. You know, something that's very achievable over that has its pros as well, because if you actually achieve it and you worked your ass off and you achieved it, it gives you a sense of accomplishment, right? Which could fuel you onto your next incremental goal. So that's kind of like the baby steps, the turtle beats the hare in the race sort of thing. So I don't know. I think everybody's a little bit different and everybody needs a little bit different motivation. And I think the environment and the parents play a key role here. So me as an outsider, look, Benny, I get emails on a regular basis. I would say on a weekly basis, you know, at least an email comes or two comes my way. And it's a parent asking me, hey, Gary, you know, longtime listener, whatever, you know, big fan. I have this 12-year-old kid, you know, this is his situation. And they'll give me a good 500-word email trying to describe the situation. And at the end of the day, my answer is almost always the same. I don't know you. I don't know your kid. I know you tried to describe it as best as possible, but the answer, I mean, I would literally have to go and see your kid play a lot. And then I would have to speak to you a lot. And then if you're asking me, should I jump ship here and go to this MLS next team, or should I go to ECNL, or should, or our current coach is awesome, or should I stay here? I'd have to go and see the training currently. I'd have to go to see the MLS next thing. I'd have to go to the ECNL coach or team that you're planning on going. I'd have to do a full-on assessment to potentially give you some decent advice. You know? So it's very, very difficult to get back to your question as to what a player should do. Should they aim to be pro or should they aim to be a starter 2 years from now on their U12 team? I don't know, Benny. I don't know. It's challenging, man. I think if you have both, it's probably best, meaning have the dream and then build little goals for yourself along the way so you can have little successes. But that's going to be up to the parents.
Yeah. That's funny, Gary. I think maybe people think you have like a crystal ball that can see the future with all your experience, but that's hilarious. But I also think too, Gary, is that maybe, and you can chime in on this too with what you've seen from players, but I feel like if it's the parent desire for the kid to become pro and not the kids, then it's never going to happen, right? You need the kid to be the one saying like, hey, dad, take me to the park early today or before training, or I want to get to training an hour early today. If it's a parent dragging the kid saying, hey, you're going to go early today, I feel like by the time they're 15, 16, like they're just absolutely burnt out. And you see it in movies all the time, right? It's like the dad will say to the kid, like, oh, this is what you wanted. This is, you know, this is your dream. And the kid's like, no, dad, this is your dream. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, but I also think it depends, Benny. It depends on the culture that we're talking about. It depends on the specific circumstances of the kid and of the parent and the family environment. It depends, because you also hear a lot of stories from pros or former pros that describe their dad or whoever as being really tough and hard on them and doing the things that you just described and dragging their ass to training or extra training or personal training or training with the dad themselves. You know, they're being dragged around, and the player will come out and say, hey, I look back and that's what made me who I am now. And I don't think if I had a father doing these things and being a hard ass that I would be the success that I am now. So you have both stories, right? So it's very difficult to give universal advice. And by the way, this is why, going back to the emails I received from parents, and it's hard for me to give advice, this is why we created the Parent Development Masterclass, is to give them the education, give them the tools required so that they then can be good mentors to their kids. Again, it's not a guarantee that their kid is going to be a pro or a kid's going to get a D1 scholarship, not a guarantee at all, but at least the parents are better equipped to make educated guesses, at least. You know what happens? Look, I haven't been to the doctor since I was like in my early 20s. Okay. I swear to God, I haven't. That's not true. I've gone to urgent care for like an infection or something stupid like that. Okay. But I've been a caregiver. You know, my parents have had some, you know, they're up there in age. They had some health issues at some point. I did what I could. And one of the first things that you do when you get diagnosed with something or may get, there's a certain prognosis, is you educate yourself and you learn as much as you can about whatever disease or condition that you have. Why do you do that? Well, because you want to make educated decisions or educated guesses. You're not going to be a doctor yourself. There's no chance. You can't be a doctor. You're not going to be a researcher or a scientist to try to cure the disease either. Okay. So why do you educate yourself? So that you can at least, I don't know, have good questions, formulate good questions. And like I said, educated guesses. And I think that is what's missing in American soccer, is that parents are completely flying blind and doing the best they can with either little information or really bad information. And I think everything that's been out there in the information sphere in American soccer is really, really bad advice and really bad information.
Yeah, Gary, just to track back a little, I'm not saying that a parent pushing a kid to go and train is bad, right? And I know you don't care about baseball. You probably didn't watch the World Series, right? But it's for everybody that's watching, I'm sure you've seen in the World Series, right? Freddie Freeman for the Dodgers, he hit a walk-off grand slam in the bottom of the ninth inning, right? And the interviews go up to him and like, hey, Freddie, you know, how are you feeling right now? Or what does this moment mean to you? And his response is like, no, man, like, this isn't my moment. This is my dad's moment. My dad was out there every single day pitching to me, batting practice, you know? But I feel like probably Freddie was probably asking his dad, like, hey, dad, can we go out and can we play? You know what I'm saying? So I wasn't saying that for a parent to go out and push their kid is a bad thing, essentially. But I just feel like if the kid doesn't want that and they're being forced to do that, it's not going to work out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's generally true. Yeah. I think that's generally true. I mean, again, you have two ends of the spectrum. You have the right kind of pushing and then you have the wrong kind of pushing.
Well, let's talk a little bit about sacrifice and what that means to you. I know we don't just talk about pro players, but at the end of the day, right, becoming a pro is a job. And there's so much that you have to sacrifice, but not even being pro, Gary. It's like, this is what I tell my high school players all the time. It's like, if you want to be successful, if you want to be the starter on the team, you have to sacrifice a lot of things. And especially at the high school level, right? What is high school all about? It's about social life, hanging out with your friends and going out to the movies or to the mall and kicking it with your homies, right? As they like to say, but you have to sacrifice so much of that if you want to be successful, if you want to be the starter on your team, if you want to go and get recruited by Division I college. There's so much that you do have to sacrifice. I mean, nobody likes to hear it, but you have to give up going out with your friends and being social, and you miss family events. But that's for the people that want it and they want to get that Division I scholarship or be the consistent 90-minute starter on the team. So what is sacrifice to you? Let's start with the youngest ages, right? 7, 8, 9 years old. What does the sacrifice look like at those levels when you're just starting out playing club?
God, Benny, this is a huge topic. It depends on one's goals. I've said it before, you know, my experience, the youngest age that I have any sort of touch point or experience with is U10. Okay. So 9, 10 year olds, anything earlier than that, I don't know. And I do kind of blindly subscribe to the idea, hey, maximize fun, maximize their fun. If they're enjoying themselves, that's awesome because that puts them on a path to want to continue playing. And then once you get into U11, U12, U13, you know, it needs to be competitive at that point, somehow, some way. And regarding sacrifice, I mean, it's kind of hard for a kid to see. When I think of sacrifice, I think about a conscious decision. Okay. So I don't think necessarily that kids are in a situation at those ages to make a conscious decision of sacrificing something else, right, for soccer, or like, oh no, I'm going to give up playing this video game to, I don't know, go in the backyard and juggle to get better at my juggling, you know, at 10, 11. I don't think those processes there are as prominent in the way that we're talking about sacrifice, you know? So when I think about those youngest of ages, I think about the sacrifice that comes from the parents themselves, you know, and the parents giving up all of their stuff to get the kid to training, to get the kid to go to extra training, sacrificing on the monetary side and paying thousands of dollars, you know, for the kid to play club football and travel and all those sorts of things. So the sacrifice, I think, is on the parents at the earliest of ages. And then maybe once you hit, I would say 15, sacrifice starts coming into the picture, certainly when they're in high school, because then you start having distractions with girls and all the social sort of things. So we can talk about sacrifice there. And yeah, they have to give up a lot, in my opinion, if they want to become very, very good. And once you start driving, that is a huge inflection point, I believe, in a player's trajectory. Because once you start driving, you have a whole new window of freedom. And so what are you going to do with that freedom? That's when sacrifice really hits the fucking fan, right? Are you going to use that freedom for your betterment, in this case, football? Or are you going to deploy that freedom for other things? And that's a fork in the road, Benny.
Well, really quick, something that I see a lot in coaching the youth agents is the decision to play other sports, right? I've had kids who love the game. They're so talented. They have a lot of potential. Everything's going great. And then the end of the season comes and the parent comes up to me and says, this kid wants to play baseball now, or he wants to try baseball, or he wants to try basketball, right? So, and at the end of the day, the parents always tell me like, oh, like, it's his decision. I'm going to let him make the choice. He loves soccer, but he wants to try basketball. So it's hard for the young kid, especially when you're little, right? You want to get a taste of everything. You don't know what's out there. You see your friends at school play basketball or baseball. It's like, I want to try that, you know? So for them, it's hard to look big picture because they don't know what to expect, right? Especially at the young ages.
Yeah, 100%. That's why it's on the parents.
Right.
That's why I don't, when I think about sacrifice, I don't think about the kids sacrificing stuff at those ages. Like, what does a kid know about sacrifice? Yeah, you're teaching them stuff. Maybe you're teaching them the value of the dollar, or you're teaching them, you know, what sacrifice is. But let's be real. You know, like, how deep does a kid think about all of this stuff? You know, they're living more in the moment than anything else. So it's kind of difficult to even speak of the word sacrifice at those ages, in my opinion. And you hear stories about gymnasts in particular, the sacrifices that gymnasts have to make at a very, very early age, because they peak early, you know what I mean? Gold medalists and all these sorts of things. So they give up their entire social life from an extremely early age to be able to make it. And in soccer, I don't think that it's as intense at all. But from the gymnastic side, and look, I don't have any experience there, so I'm going off the cuff here. What little I've heard or read or seen in documentaries, which all of those sources are questionable, in my opinion, I don't trust anything. It seems like the parents are the driving force, you know, to make it happen, and are living vicariously through their kids. That goes for like all the individual sports, it seems, not just gymnastics, but like tennis and swimming and golf, right, with Tiger and the dad, and since he was like 3 years old and all this sort of stuff. So I don't know, take it with a grain of salt, but it seems to be a lot more predominant in solo sports, this whole notion of sacrificing at the earliest of ages. In soccer, not so much.
Yeah. And that's really interesting, Gary. That's something that I've never thought about, is that the parents are the one choosing to make that sacrifice for the kids, especially at the young ages, because, you know, not that the kids don't know anything, but the parents have to make the decision as to what they think is best for their kid and what they think is going to add the best value for their life. So I think you kind of hit it on the nail when you said when you can start driving, right? Because at that point, it's like, okay, the kid is making their own decisions. I know for me, okay, I started driving in high school. I was a soccer player. I wanted to go to college. I wanted to play pro. I didn't drive to go and do extra trainings. I drove to my friend's house, or I drove to go hang out with my girlfriend. So it's like, you can really tell, okay, is this kid bought in? Is this kid really have that desire? Or do they have other things that are more interesting to them at this time, you know? And no, that's a good point, Gary. And I see it with a lot of my high school kids. You can really tell who wants it and who wants to make it to the next level. All of them at this point are driving. And listen, Gary, they all start school at 8 a.m. At least 6 or 7 of them are driving themselves to a personal trainer at 6 a.m., you know, waking up extra early. They have that power now. Could they go and hang out with their friends or get breakfast in the morning? Sure, but they want to make the sacrifice. And for me, that's huge, because it's not easy, especially when you're in high school. You're so influenced by what your friends are doing and your peers and what people think about you. It's not easy in high school.
And this goes to how you were raised,
right?
How big those influences are or aren't. Parents don't have full control. Don't get me wrong, okay? But they have extraordinary influence throughout the development of their kid. And so depending on how you got raised is how this turns out.
Moving on to the college, because obviously as you get deeper and deeper down the line, the sacrifice becomes a lot bigger and more intense, right? So in terms of college, what are you sacrificing to be the best on your college team?
Benny, the higher up you go in level, the higher the sacrifice. Because the higher up you go, the narrower the gap is between your talent and others. And you might find yourself, as I said before, in the middle of the pack or in the rear of the pack. And so for you to actually catch up, if you're in the middle of the pack to catch up to the top, or if you're in the back to catch up to the middle and then to the top, you're going to have to sacrifice way more than you've ever sacrificed before, because there's no time either. That's the other thing. There's no time for you to make up the debt that you've accrued by not sacrificing earlier. And so that's college, man. And are you going to fold and give up? Or the other thing is just accept where you are in the pecking order? Or are you going to go hardcore and try to push through and get to the other side? What do you sacrifice? Well, I think nowadays everybody goes to college, or most people go to college, to just have a good time and socialize instead of actually learn things and be an academic, number one. So all those temptations are going to be around you. Hormones are high on the priority scale. No, for real. And so what are you going to do? Are you going to say no to the parties and all that sort of stuff and say, nope, I'm going to do 2-a-days and 3-a-days, even though I'm not required to do so for my athletic team? It's a hard choice, man. It's a hard choice. Right. But that's the situation. I've seen it countless times with players who were the man in their youth teams, and they go over there and they fold like, I don't know, like a lawn chair, okay? You just fucking fold almost immediately, Benny, almost immediately. Like it's only halfway through the first season, and you aren't the starter or you aren't getting many minutes, they throw in the white flag. It's over. Their career is done. It's incredible, Ben.
And even more so, when you go on to pro, there's an added thing of, guess what? I have more money than I've ever had before in my life. So it's like, even if you're not making a lot, maybe you're on a USL contract, but you've never had a job your whole life. Soccer has been your thing. And so now all of a sudden you have money to go and buy things or do things or go on vacation, right? So it's so much more sacrifice that you have to give up, because, hey, listen, if you wanted to, now you have the funds to go on vacation in Cancun and spend a week with your friends.
There's that. And you have your own place, your own apartment, your own everything, more freedom that you never had before. You might be in a totally different state or even a totally different country than your family, and you may have never experienced that before. What are you going to do with that added freedom? you may not be the starter. You probably won't be the starter because when you're 18 or 17 or 19 or something and you're a rookie in pro sports, the likelihood that you're immediately a starter or getting really significant minutes is small. It is small. So how are you going to handle that? Are you going to go home and just rot your brain away with whatever? Or are you going to do the work, Benny? And the added component that's not there in college that is there in the pro game is what you said. It's now a job. And many players have never had a job in their life. They never worked at McDonald's. They never swept floors. You know, they never worked at a retailer. They never had a job, Ben. Never. And all of a sudden, now you have literally a job. And it is performance-based. And you can't F around. Because the performance is there for all to see. You can't hide. In an office job, Benny, you can kind of hide, you know? And McDonald's, yeah, okay, you have to execute the fries or the burgers or whatever, but you can kind of hide, you know, and waste time and not be on the full time. And you don't have time to F around because if you don't crack it within the first 2 or 3 years as a pro, then you're done, dude.
That's part of having a mentality too. It's like if you have a soft mentality and you weren't raised in that way to have tough skin and, you know, overcome challenges. Just like you said, even if you're in college and you're a freshman and you're riding the bench, I can't tell you how many players just can't handle that. You know what I'm saying?
And the lower you are in the pecking order, the higher the sacrifice. The higher the sacrifice. If you have catching up to do, you have to sacrifice 2 or 3 times what the other, your competitors are sacrificing.
Yeah, that's a heartbreaker. I mean, look at, you mentioned Leo Messi in the beginning of the episode, right? And this guy is still showing up 3 hours before everybody. And he's at the top of the pecking order, you know? So it's like, you have to put in way more work than your competitors if you want to have any chance of survival.
And Ben, it's even worse at the pro level too, because they'll just replace you, dude. You're not in competition with just your teammates there or just your local area or your local region or your local country or anything. You're in a global competition. So if you're not cutting it, they will just get somebody else. You're gone, Ben.
Yeah, Gary, that's the hard part. And I think a lot of people don't realize it. Something that I always think about is you tell me like the life of a pro, or even for you, like the life of an agent. What you see in the movies, you see like the glitz and the glamour and all these nights, expensive things and fancy lifestyle. But that's 1% of the actual work that it is, right? 99% of it is hard work and fucking killing yourself just to survive at that level.
It's true in everything, man. Like there's, you get a new job, Ben. Let's say you get you applied, you got an interview, you know, you prepared for the interview. They offer you the job. You're excited. You're like, oh man, this is awesome. And everybody congratulates you. And you have this vision of how great things are going to be. You're getting a fresh start. You're starting a new company. This is what you wanted to do maybe all your life or the past year, whatever. And once you get in there, okay, it's the grudge work. You have to have massive grit to get up to speed, get on the learning curve. And it's almost never what you thought it would be, Benny, in whatever job you go to. You name it. You name any job. It's not what you imagine. You always imagine like the best case scenario. Otherwise, you wouldn't accept the job. Otherwise, you wouldn't have applied for the job in the first place. So you envision this awesome, seemingly paradise if you were to just land the job. It's not true, man. It's fucking work. This is the biggest problem with mentality. If you have the wrong mentality, Ben, you literally have to change who you are as a human. You have to change who you are. You no longer can be Benny Rogers. You no longer can be Efrain Alvarez. You have to change who you are as a human if your mentality is not compatible with the correct mentality for success. You have to change who you are as a human. It's hard. Almost nobody does that. Who does that? You have to change who your friends are. You have to change what your habits are. You have to be willing to give up everything that you used to perhaps enjoy even. Sometimes you have to give up family. You have to give up friends. You have to give up all of it.
And it's not easy. I mean, I don't pretend to know everything about science, but our brains are literally wired to be stuck in a habit. So you literally have to rewire the neurons in your brain if you want to change who you are as a person, which is not easy to do.
It's excruciatingly difficult, Benny. I think I've only ever achieved it once to a certain degree and then kind of half-assed it, you know, on another occasion or two. I'll tell you the first one. The first one was my early days in college. I kind of bombed and ruined a whole year academically. Yeah, because of girls. a girl in specific also. And so, yeah, I just flipped a switch one day. It was summer. I flipped a switch. I said, I'm giving everything up, all of it. And I'm going to live at the university. I'm literally going to live there constantly and just go on in empty classrooms and write on the board and give lectures to an imaginary audience and simulate questions being bombarded at me from this imaginary audience. And I'm like, oh, that's a good question. Let me go ahead and explain why this is the way it is. Like, people might think I'm crazy with what I just described, but that's actually what I did. I completely changed who I was. And then academically, a 180 degree turn at that point, completely different. And I think that propelled me in a completely different trajectory than the one I was originally on. The one I was originally on was the one of being a fuck up and a screw up and completely less than mediocre. And who knows where that trail ends, to the one I ended up going on, which I'm not going to say is amazing and I'm a success or anything like that, but I certainly believe it's way better than the track that I was on originally. And some people need to hit, that's what they call rock bottom, right? Some people need to hit rock bottom for them to say enough is enough and I need to change who I am as a human. And most folks don't hit rock bottom because most folks, in my opinion, don't go massively bankrupt or don't have, I don't know, a near-death experience because of the path that they've been going on. Or it has to be something so outrageously, drastically impactful to your life for you to hit rock bottom. And for the most part, here in the United States, in my opinion, you probably don't get to experience true rock bottom. And so most people don't change who they are.
I was just going to ask you, what made you have that 180 switch? Was it like just the feeling of seeing your grades and you're failing and you're like, fuck, this isn't me? Or was it like embarrassment of where you were in life? Or what was it that made you? Because for somebody to, especially in college, to give up that lifestyle of, you know, going out with friends and hanging out, partying, meeting with girls, to completely just give all that up, I feel like a lot of people wouldn't do that. So what was it specifically where you were like, fuck, I need to change?
I felt a deep sense of not being fulfilled as a person. Like I just felt like the days would go by and yeah, I'd have my fun in the moment and good times, but there was always this lingering sense of not being fulfilled, whatever that means. You know, it just wasn't lasting. You know, it was all fleeting moments of euphoria, but nothing meaningful, Benny. And the times that I felt something meaningful were like when I had to work my ass off to maybe earn like an A or really solve a particular problem in math or physics, and solving those puzzles that gave me more fulfillment. And I'm like, what am I doing? I'm wasting I wasted a whole fucking year. And this stuff over here is just waiting for me to dedicate myself to it. And I don't know, I think that was enough for me. I just felt a sense of emptiness inside. And I said, I don't want to feel this way anymore. I'm going to abandon who I am.
What was, you said there was two times that this happened in your life, right? What was the second one?
No, the other ones aren't like drastic. The other ones are just making a decision to be uncomfortable. So for example, after college, you know, I started working as an engineer and scientist at Boeing, at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, then back at Boeing. And the opportunity came to try an entrepreneurial venture. And so I just said, I'm kind of comfortable. I got a good salary. I got a good career. Everybody thinks I'm a success or whatever. I'm gonna throw all of that in the trash to be super uncomfortable and do something that has no guarantees, right? And that's when I started this online medical record company that ended up not working. But that was another moment that is a drastic measure, you know, because most people in my position, I think, you just keep going. You have a career. What are you doing? You have a career. This is what you wanted to do. You wanted to be in the space industry. You wanted to work on spacecraft and satellites. You just keep going. You know, you work your way up the corporate ladder and off you go. And I just threw it all in the trash to try something new and be uncomfortable. And then I did it again and threw all that in the trash and went and, you know, started a soccer company. And so those are other moments where I'm perpetually catapulting myself into uncomfortable situations. And that's not easy. And that demands you change who you are as a person.
Let me ask you this. Do you now feel that fulfillment that you were missing? Do you feel like these changes that you made led to, I don't know, you being happier or you feeling like you have a sense of purpose now in life?
It's difficult, Ben. I feel content. I think that's the appropriate word. I wouldn't say happy because happiness, in my opinion, is a fleeting sort of thing. And right. The word I like using, and I didn't come up with it. Somebody else came up with it. I don't remember who, is content. Are you content with your life? I think I'm content with my life. I have a lot of challenges, which keep me stimulated. I have good relationships, which is awesome. I have a roof over my head, food on the plate, the freedom to explore whatever it is I want to explore. I mean, come on. It's not bad.
Listen, you can disagree with me or not, but I feel like content, it kind of sounds like the same word as like complacent or like complacency. Do you think it's different or what do you think?
I think that you have a point if we're not comparing it to happiness. Mm-hmm. So the comparison that we were making is, are you happy? No, that's not correct. You know, I don't think that's a good question to ask people is, are you happy? Huh? Well, nobody's always happy. Happiness happens in little moments in time.
Right, right.
So the question doesn't even make sense. So I think it's more appropriate to say, hey, are you content with your life? I think that's just more appropriate, man. Does it mean that you're complacent? No, it doesn't mean necessarily that you're complacent, but if you frame it a certain way and you make it synonymous with complacent, I get your point. But it is a dangerous thing to think of. Oh, I'm content with my life. So if you are, then you're not ambitious anymore. You're just going to chill and go in cruise control. But I think you know me well enough. That's not me.
That's why I was wondering. You're the least fucking complacent person that I know. You're always trying to build and better yourself, better your company, better your relationships.
Yeah, but that is what makes me content, is being able to do those things.
Right.
If I was complacent and just in cruise control, I would be a miserable person and not content. Because then it would be like, oh, is this all there is? I'm just going to do this forever? Like, then that sucks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. I feel like if you were to go right now and ask Messi, are you happy? This fool has won everything that he can possibly win. A beautiful family, you know,
I think he would agree with me and say that he's content, because I don't know, they literally just lost and they're out of the MLS playoffs. I don't think he's happy right now. If you go talk to him, are you happy, Leo? No, he's not happy.
He's probably happy this fool can spend more time with his family now and go on vacation.
If you ask me to bet, I would bet that if you ask him that question today, he'll say, I'm not happy. If you ask him the question, are you content with your life or whatever, he'll say yes.
But if you ask him, are you happy with your life? He would say probably not.
No, he'll say yes, that he's happy with his life.
But just the question, are you happy? It's what you're saying doesn't make sense to ask, right?
Correct, correct. Because that is a question of in the moment and toward, you know, and in the moment and maybe towards the future. If you say, are you happy with your life? Then you look towards your past and you look at the history of your life throughout your past and you're like, oh yeah, I'm happy with my life and you know, where I'm at right now. Sure, that's a cool question.
Right. You're going to laugh, Gary, but I actually took a class. It was like a communications class, and I wish I remembered more about it. It was like 4 years ago, but it was, what was it called? Communication and the Art of Happiness. Sick class, Jay. But so one of the things we learned is like... No, but seriously, one of the things that, you know, the professor taught us, and I love this professor, it's a fucking badass professor, but she says, we create our own happiness. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of people think like they just deserve to be happy, or that if you get a job, your dream job, or you get all the money in the world, that all of a sudden you're going to be happy. But you have to go and create your own happiness, meaning like, look at your situation and where you are in life, and you are the one to decide, am I happy with this, right? It's not just something that is given to you. You know, you have the power to look at your surroundings and have that mindset of like, fuck, like you just said, I have a roof over my head. I have great relationships and awesome job. Like, yeah, I am happy. You know, a lot of people think it's just like, oh, happiness is a given, or it's like something that you deserve to be. You know what I'm saying? You got to go and create your own happiness.
All I got to say, man, I don't know if it was money well spent taking that course, but okay.
Hey. It counted towards my degree, you know, so there you go. Money well spent.
I feel you know what's interesting about, you know, we just had an election and people get all political. It's political season and, you know, they make enemies talking about politics, but I don't care. I think people understand what 343 has always represented. It represents a meritocracy, freedom, opportunity, merit, a meritocracy. And speaking of the class that you just took, look, I would not be surprised if in relatively short order, there's going to be a whole bunch of college courses that are going to shut the fuck down, not exist anymore. There's going to be entire departments that are wiped out from the face of the earth. There's going to be all this, look, I got to be careful with what I say, okay? But all kinds of garbage, STEM's not really going to be touched. Science, technology, engineering, mathematics, because that is objective reality. That is what builds civilization and advances civilization. But stuff outside of that, man, especially the recent stuff that came out of nowhere, and fuck off, no more funding. No, I'm telling you, the federal funding is going to be shut down and all that stuff is going to be wiped out.
My degree is going to be fucking wiped out.
What's your communications and marketing, right?
Yeah, communication. Human communication is what they call it.
Well, it's needed. That's
something
stuff
that's
needed.
Important, Edgar. I mean, in every single thing that we do, whether you know it or not, is communication, right? And you are communicating with other people, whether you realize it or not, meaning your body language, the way that you dress, way that you present yourself.
100%, Benny. Look, I started this business in 2013, the soccer business, the 343 business. What do you think I studied for years and years and years and years while I built this business? A huge proportion was marketing. And marketing is all about the art of persuasion and being able to communicate effectively in different mediums to persuade people about what it is that you know, and what it is that you're offering them, what products and services can improve the lives of the people you're selling to. And why is that true? So there is a shit ton of value there, and you can't have a business and you can't build up civilization even without being an effective communicator. Because you can do all the science, technology, engineering, mathematics you want, but then you have to communicate it to your colleagues and the rest of the world, you know, and then that is going to drive organization. And that in turn is going to drive the building of the products and services that we all rely on.
You can laugh, but you can even go as far as to say that like Trump won the election because of his communication style and the things that he said or the podcast that he went on, right? I don't know. It's crazy, Gene.
It's all interconnected, but yeah, okay. We went on the biggest tangent in 343 history. But that's all right, man. I don't care. I don't care, Benny. I'm just going to publish. I'm here to shoot the shit with you. We're going to talk soccer. We're going to talk masterclass and coaching and development and professionals, this and that or whatever. But as I've always shared with you and others who have worked with us and the audience even, this is more than just soccer. This is more than just about soccer. And I don't remember the quote word for word, I'm paraphrasing here. I think it was maybe Jorge Valdano. I don't remember exactly, but soccer is much more than a stupid sport. It's not about kicking the ball around the pitch. Right. It's about all this other social, political, economic, and cultural. It's a proxy for those very human things. And that's what right. We're doing right now, man.
100%. And that's something that I really respect about you, Gary, in 343. It's like you've never gone away from what you truly believe in, even if you could have gone the other way. And like, if your goal was to make fucking $10 million, you could have easily sided with MLS and all of this shit.
Totally. Totally.
But you didn't, you know, you stuck to your values and what you believe in. And I think that's why a lot of people appreciate you, you know, and even some people that don't agree with you, that's like, fuck, well, what, you know, what he's saying makes sense.
All right, Benny. Yeah. I'll see you tomorrow. Right. Or no.
Yeah. 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 I'll see you tomorrow at Olympic.
Okay, Ben. Catch you later, right, man.
Good stuff, dude.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.